This is the fifth part in the audio instruction for Teachers Leaders of the River of Life program. You should have before you now, in fact, call up and have it start to play on the first slide. There are actually 9 slides that appear before the first confluence that you'll be building with scripts. So there are going to be 9 slides, some of them are somewhat complicated, that you're going to be flashing on screen for groups of children, groups of adults, before you actually start the program. How fast you move through them depends on how much time you have, what level of audience you have, what groups you have. In fact, there have been times when I've basically skipped them. I've just put the River of Life title slide on, skipped slides 2 through 9, and then just gone right to slide 10 of Confluence, where rather than using slides, I've just spent a minute or two explaining how this program proceeds and then just moving right into it. But let's say, for example, that you do have an opportunity to be able to present these 9 slides. Even if you're with a mixed group of elementary age kids, the older elementary age kids, many of them will be able to understand pretty much all of what you'll be flashing on. The younger ones won't, but I can guarantee you they're not going to lose their focus because the slides are visually interesting and they'll get mesmerized by it. So don't worry if it's just airmailing the younger ones. But again, if you're just working with a younger class of just, let's say, up through third grade or so, you're not going to be wanting to use any scripts at all, I imagine, because only a few kids would be able to read at that level, and it's unfair to just single out the kids that are reading over their grade level and capable of doing it. And so you're probably not going to really want to show these either. You're just going to be extemporaneously running through the slides. It's difficult to do. I've done it once before for first through third graders, and it wasn't particularly fun. My ideal group is elementary age mixed. And the older ones will participate, and then the gifted students that are second and third grade, that are sometimes awesome readers, will be participating just as well. But I really like having mixed ages. So I'll just run you through these slides. There's no teacher instruction guide you're using for this. You're supposed to be fully present in the class. Doesn't matter if you make errors. Run through it yourself, rehearse it a little bit. Really doesn't matter. The point is that you are present to the class, you are present to the slides, and when you click, you'll have a chance to see what you should be saying or what you should have said. All right, so let's start the slideshow. Click the play button, whether you're on Keynote or PowerPoint. First slide, River of Life. Now when you click, you're going to have appear a face of a man. This is the face of the author, and for kids, for older kids who can read, you might ask him, you say, what's the title of this book? And just have the kids call out again, best if you don't do raised hands, but The Ancestor's Tale. The subtitle is A Pilgrimage to the Dawn of Life. Then you can say, what's the author's name? And some kids will be able to read Richard Dawkins. You can say, that's a picture of the author on the right. He's one of the world's great evolutionary biologists. And he wrote a book that made it possible for the very first time. You know, people of my generation, whoever you are as a teacher leader, we didn't have access to this kind of a scientific understanding to help us make this journey. Your generation, if you're talking to the young kids, your generation is the first to be able to make and celebrate this journey thanks to scientists like Richard Dawkins. Now, that's a fossil that he's standing next to. Do any of you know what kind of fossil that is? Some of the kids might know that it's an ammonite. If they do, you might mention that ammonites, just like the dinosaurs, went extinct 65 million years ago at the end of the Mesozoic era, and that some of them got quite large. They're a species of mollusk, which means they're basically related to squid, but they have shells on them. They have calcified shells on them, similar to clams and oysters that are also mollusks. Okay, next slide. You'll see a picture of something that looks like a deciduous tree in winter that has lost all its leaves, with the words on the bottom saying Tree of Life. Here you might, the first thing before you continue clicking, mention that talking about ancestry, and that scientists have known for a long time that all of us, all species alive today, have great-grandparents, great-great-great-grandparents, great-great-great-great-great-grandparents, and then it goes all the way back millions and millions of years. We're all related to the very first origin of life about 3.8 billion years ago. And so some scientists draw it as a kind of tree, or think about it as kind of tree, that if you were to start at the bottom with when life arose, and that's the oldest time, and then you have births happening and descendants happening and new species evolving, what you have happening is it starts looking like a tree as species differentiate, and you have more and more complexity developing. And then finally, you'll have species all over on all these branches, and you'll have millions of species like we have today. Click and click now, and you'll see a pink dot lines up on one of the twigs. And you can say, let's assume that this little pink dot is our species of Homo sapiens today. Now, how many species of humans are there? Children should know this. The correct answer is one. Even though there's more than 6 billion individuals, and even though some of us look very different from one another, we're all the same species. There's just one species of human alive today. Click again, the river of life will appear. You say, now class, let's start thinking about this in a new way. Let's not look at this picture as a tree in winter. Let's pretend instead that instead of standing on the ground looking at a tree in winter, we are actually flying in a plane over the top of the land, over the top of some mountain ranges. And you can actually see from really high up, maybe we're up in the space station, from really high up, you can see rivers flowing into other rivers, flowing into larger rivers. This is what a river looks. It's called a watershed when you're in the mountains, something that looks like this. So another way, instead of working from the origin of life forward in time to us at this little pink dot alive right now, we can start in the present as a little pink dot and pretend that we're flowing back through the river of life, that we are taking a journey, a pilgrimage, walking back through time, through our parents, our grandparents, our great-grandparents, our great-great-grandparents, our great-great-great-great-great-grandparents. Now click again, a little star will appear at the first place where a tributary happens. Now since we have ancestors all the way back to the origin of life, that means occasionally we're going to come to a place like this, a confluence in the stream, where our great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandparent at this point in time is the same as other species' great-great-great-great-grandparent alive today. We're all related. And at these special spots, we're going to share an ancestor with other species alive today. Click again, you'll see another one come in. You could ask, how many species alive today would be joining the river of life that we're in, making a pilgrimage back through time at this point? The answer is two. How many at this spot? Two. How many at this spot? Three. And so on. Now, some of the kids will get it. If they don't, doesn't matter. It's pretty. Keep going. The next slide that you'll click on shows round circles. I like to think of them as raindrops that contain creatures in them. You'll see creatures that you can recognize. There's a rhinoceros. There's a spider. Second from the lower left is a cicada. There's a caterpillar there. You can ask the kids what kind of caterpillar. Some of them may know. It's a monarch butterfly caterpillar. So this is where you can talk to them about imagining now that all the 10, 20 million species alive on Earth today, and scientists haven't even discovered all of them. Some of them are too small, or they're in too remote a jungle for scientists to have discovered and named them all. But scientists figure that there's maybe 10 to 20 million species alive today. Let's assume that every single species alive today is represented by a single raindrop. Our species, Homo sapiens, would be in a single raindrop too. And all those raindrops are falling, now you can click to the next slide, are falling from the clouds on a rainy day onto the ridgetops of a range of mountains. Click again and you'll see the dots there. Now, this particular slide is the Great Smoky Mountains National Park. It's the Appalachians. I took this picture, and you can ask the kids whether any of them have been to the Great Smoky Mountains. But let's assume that the raindrops, all 20 million of them, are falling on the tops of ridges and mountains and so forth. The ones that are most closely related to one another are falling closest together. And they're going to start being pulled down by gravity. And as it rains, they're going to be forming little rivulets as they move down the slopes by gravity and then joining with others, and you can click here. Let's assume this pink dot is our species of humans. Gravity's going to pull us down, and we're going to be, click again, and we're going to be walking through our ancestors, our great-grandparents, great-great-grandparents, and so on as we take this pilgrimage back to the very beginning of life, 3.8 billion years ago. Now, all the other raindrops are going to be doing that too. Gravity is going to be taking them down. Our two closest relatives here, two species, are going to be making that same journey. And you see there's a point there where our ancestor is the same as their ancestor. We have a common ancestor. This is a confluence in the River of Life. Richard Dawkins calls it a concestor. It's a kind of ancestor that is shared in common, not only with us, but with other species. Now, the rest of this you can go through very quickly, or you can go through slowly if you want to do math lessons with it. It just depends on how much time you have. You click again, you'll see this is confluence number one. This is the first time that we humans have met other species joining us in this river of life. Now, you can ask the kids, if you were one of these red dots here, one of these other species, what confluence number would this be for you? Some of the children will get it. It'll actually be confluence number two for those particular species. So every species making the journey is going to have a whole, you know, it's going to have a whole different number of ways of joining in. On this pilgrimage, we're just going to track our own species. It's like we're just floating down this river, and we're going to notice whenever a tributary comes in, and then we're going to see who's floating in that tributary. And that's all we're going to be doing. So click again and ask. Here you see a question coming in words. It says, how many confluences are there for humans to travel back in time on this river of life pilgrimage all the way to the ocean of origin? So then I just simply like to ask the adults or the kids, whoever there, how many of you think it's going to be more than 1,000 in order to pick up all 10 or 20 million species? Just raise your hand if you think it's more than 1,000. How many of you think it's going to be less than 1,000 but more than 100? Raise your hand. How many of you think less than 100? Well, then make a click again. What you'll see turning up here, the words go away, and you'll see in the lower right corner 40. And so you can simply mention there's only going to be 40 confluences. For us, floating in this river of life, only 40 times will other tributaries come into our river before we get to the ocean of origin, 3.8 billion years ago. And you can see why this is. Take a look at the yellow dots at confluence 6. All of them are more closely related than they are to us. So they're all going to be all joining up together on their own journey before they all come together and join us as a group. So you don't need to do any more with that slide. I just have it as a visual and just move on. The next slide you click is a gray slide that has words on it say, how do scientists know this? How do scientists know this? I like to, rather than just asking them, I like to click the slides and have the slides have them think about it. Well, first of all, before they even think of the question, they're going to be astonished. They're going to say, wait a second. Click there and you'll see two hands. One, it kind of looks like a human hand, but it's not. So just very quickly tell them, the hand on the left is not a human hand. It's a hand of one of our, quote, close relatives. So scientists figure out who's more closely related to us by looking at who looks like us, who has body parts that are most like ours. That's an indication that it's probably one of our close relatives. So let me just ask you, who do you think this hand belongs to? What species? So just let the kids call out. Doesn't have to be hands, just let them call out. Some may say chimpanzees, some may say gorillas, some may say monkeys. There may be someone who says orangutan. Whatever the answers, don't give any indication of right or wrong answer. Just take what all they are until they seem to have exhausted the supply of possibilities, and then just simply say, we're going to find the answer to that a little later. We'll find out who among you is right on this. But let's continue. So how do scientists know this? Click the next slide. You'll see two skeletons come up. You might ask the kids, what are these? They'll say fossils. And you say, what are the species they're fossils of? The kids would know. It's a T-Rex and some kind of a Stegosaurus. And you say, okay, so part of how scientists know is that they dig up fossils and they compare at points back in time, what did the species look like? Who looked more like one another? And who's our direct ancestors? This is another way that they can understand how we're related in this vast journey of life. And there's a third way too. Now click again, and you'll see two pictures there, and the kids will call out DNA. Some of them will know, younger kids won't have a clue, but it doesn't matter. Aim this class, if you've got mixed elementary in here, aim it for the upper level kids, and the younger ones will come along. Don't dumb it down. Don't have the upper kids get bored. Don't go so slowly they're bored. Aim it for the upper level kids, and the younger ones will be fascinated and come along. So that's DNA. That's what a DNA spiral molecule, a scale model of it looks like on top. Obviously, that's not what it really looks like. And on the bottom is the kind of testing that they do with different DNA so that they can compare very precisely who's related to one another. Now, what I like to point out to the kids is that when I was getting my science degree in college, the only thing, even though DNA had been discovered, scientists had no way to be able to look at it and to decide and to look and compare one DNA with another. They hadn't invented that technology yet. So the only way that they could study who was more closely related to whom was by the two slides on the left. But now your generation is in an era in which we can see by the DNA. And when I'm with adults, I'll use this as an opportunity to mention how important it is to find that basically scientists had figured out a tree of life or a river of life of who's most related to whom, you know, long ago, and they've been refining it based entirely on the left two pictures, that kind of evidence. The cool thing has been that when DNA comparison came in, they found that in almost all circumstances, with some differences, the DNA corroborated, that is, it confirmed what they had already intuited based on the evidence. And in science, when you find two or more paths of evidence that say the same thing, you're pretty secure that you're on the right path. That's an important point to help kids get an understanding of what science is and why you can trust it. And how also it's completely willing to update itself when it finds that something's wrong. So let's pause there and move to the next audio. Again, you're going to want to stay on the keynote here or on the digital slide or PowerPoint program. We'll come back right to here. But let's pause for the second audio, for the sixth and what will probably be the final audio in this series.